This podcast is intended for mature audiences.
It also contains two British people talking about sex.
If you're turfy and you know it, go fuck off.
Hello. And welcome to T-Plex and Joysticks, the kinky video game podcast. I'm Chris.
Hey, you got it right this time, and I'm Sai.
How are you, Sai?
I'm full of cold this week.
Yeah.
I don't know how I managed it, but it's just like I've gone from like one illness to another, and it's just like the first thing that was doing me and Nick last week is mostly sorted now. Like, hi, I'm good, sorry about that. This week I've just got cold, and I'm miserable because I've got cold.
Yeah, colds are annoying. They're not terrible, but they're very annoying.
Oh, I'm just in that position. It's just like this is the first cold or anything I've had like since pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I'm just tired of being sick at this point because like I've just gone from one to another.
That's pretty much how I felt when I had my cold in December, and then I got COVID in last month, as you know. I'm like, yeah, COVID was fine. The cold was so much worse.
I mean, touching wood right now, but like I had managed to avoid COVID, so.
I know that is not the experience for most people. Just putting it out there.
Yeah. But anyway, what are we talking about this week?
We are talking about like imagery and expression.
I'm looking forward to this conversation.
That'll be
this is going to be a very different conversation to what we normally have, but I think it's one that's worth having.
I mean, we have a lot of unusual conversations on this podcast.
We have a lot of unusual conversations, full stop, even not on this podcast, let's be honest.
So yeah, you're saying this is unusual? No, everything we do is unusual.
But before we get to the bag, what's the tea, Chris?
Tea this week. I am going to talk about Marvel and DC Comics. They have already revealed their special edition covers for Pride Month 2022, which is not...
It's a little early.
Yeah, which is not in a few months. 3 months, in fact.
I mean, okay, it's a little early and it's not a little early because we have just had, in the UK, LGBT History Month.
That is true, but...
So, Marvel, yes or no.
Marvel and DC are not very British.
This is very true. Anything, like, particularly interesting within it that we found?
No, just very, very rainbowy.
So just the usual pink washing.
I wouldn't go that far.
I mean, I would, considering what we know that Disney and Marvel have been... Well, okay, more Disney than Marvel, because Marvel's a subsidiary, but, like, what we know they've been up to recently. And it turns out, like, for those that don't know, Marvel helped to fund and sort of progress through tacit support the Don't Say Gay Florida Bill, as it's known, which, for those who aren't familiar, is essentially the old Section 28 rule that UK had.
Pretty much.
But in Florida, which prevents, you know, discussing of gender and sexuality, etc., within education settings, etc. There's a lot of turvy shit going on in America right now. They're taking advantage of everyone looking the other direction right now.
Yeah.
Fuck the turfs. And if you're a turf and you don't like me saying that, kindly fuck off. This is not the podcast for you.
No. Yeah, but you don't welcome turfs.
I make no apologies if that offends anyone. I really don't. Like, kindly fuck right off.
We do not welcome turfs on this podcast. I don't want you listening to us.
Not at all.
News-wise, these 2 weeks is kind of difficult to look away from what's going on in Ukraine.
It is, and rightly so, but at the same time, like, that doesn't mean that certain cunts should be using it to take advantage.
Oh, no, but that's not what I'm saying at all.
Sorry, I'm on my soapbox.
Yeah, back onto the comic books side, both Marvel and DC are kind of releasing some kind of anthology kind of comic book as a special Prime Month edition, so kind of, you know, a bit of trying to grab the pink pound there. it seems.
I mean, let's be honest, they do this every month. Not every month, every year.
Yeah.
Like, it's always the same, and it doesn't matter whether it's Marvel or DC or, I don't know, like, pick a corporate entity of the moment, you know?
Yeah.
It's just... I think I've said before, like, I've got very jaded when it comes to the pinkwashing that happens around Pride.
It's when it is not Pride Month that is genuinely the more interesting things happen.
Exactly. It's like when you're actually showing support all year round, that's when I'm going to have more time for you.
Yeah, and to be fair, the two comic book companies generally do. They do have relatively good representation these days.
These days. They've got better in recent years. They haven't always been great with it. Oh, yeah. They have got better.
Yeah, we know that.
Apart from when their parent companies are funding various things. Although, let's point out here, Disney has apparently apologised. Marvel has denounced the fact that Disney did it.
Yeah.
Like, let's be fair here.
Yeah, and Disney have also said they have stopped funding Florida.
I know, but
somehow.
Like, it's all well and great, like, to stop funding things after the damage is done.
I know, right? Shouldn't have happened in the first place.
No, it shouldn't. But I'm not surprised.
Like Disney has got such a massive presence in Florida.
This is the same Disney that was doing this while simultaneously going, hey, we're your friends, have some gay characters that are only incidentally, through one line in an entire 45-minute scene, gay. Have I made my point yet? Sod it. Like, that's just my tea for this week. Like, that, like, simultaneous, just like, fuck you, Disney.
Okay.
That's my tea this week. It's just like, we'll praise the comic book shit, but also fuck you, Disney.
Is that all your tea?
I don't know. I had some other tea, but
other tea. Yes,
have other tea. Yes. No, so... It's kind of going back to what I opened the show with on the cold open. So a trigger warning just for our listeners, looks like transphobia, like discussions of transphobia is ahead of it, and sort of particularly how this relates to the ongoing conflict in Ukraine by Russia. Couple of seconds to skip if you need it. And okay, so unfortunately, Twitter has been... Well, Twitter, because there was a article written in a paper. I'm not going to name the paper because they can fuck off.
All right.
Where they published details about a trans man who was fleeing Ukraine.
Oh.
And this was written from the angle of, I guess it was meant to be a interest piece. However, the way that it was written was... Look, the bottom line is this. There was a trans man fleeing Ukraine who, for the purpose of getting over the border, because men are banned from leaving the country at the moment, if they're between, is it 18 and 60 or something like that?
I don't know.
They sort of... They did themselves up to pass as female... So they could sort of go over the border with their mother that they were looking after. And Twitter did what Twitter does. And a good amount of people came out and went, yeah, I had done the same. And a good amount of the TERFs came out and went, oh, well, only when it suits you, this, that, and the other. Fuck off. Because here's the thing. I'm preaching to the choir with our audience. I know, or at least I hope I'm preaching to the choir with our audience. But here's the thing. Have you seen how Russia treats any of the LGBT society?
Mm.
Have you seen how they treat especially the trans community? Fuck right off. I don't blame anyone getting... Full stop, it's a war zone. I don't blame anyone getting out there, full stop. But I especially do not blame anyone from the LGBTQ community maneuvering themselves away from the fucking oncoming Russian war machine. Fuck that shit. And if you're out there going, oh, like making this to make cheap political points, that's just frankly fucking bullshit. Kindly I can't say what I want to say, because if I say what I want to say, we'll get taken down. But I think my feeling on this is pretty well communicated. Like, I'm sorry, I don't understand how people can be so callous. I really don't.
I don't have a follow-up on that. Jesus Christ.
You know what the follow-up on that is? Fuck the turfs.
Yeah.
If you're turfing, you know it, is, fuck yourself.
That is always a right response to anything.
I'm sorry, I just... What the fuck? Anyway, shall I... I'm going to come down off my soapbox.
Okay, welcome back.
Shall we head into the bag?
Okay, let's try that.
I like how you're sat there just like, I don't know, are you calm enough? So what are we talking about this week, Chris, or do you want me to introduce this one?
Well, it's more your topic, isn't it?
But okay.
Yeah, it's...
So I wanted us to have a discussion around... And this is slightly different to what we normally do. Like, usually we come in and we have a topic that we want to talk about, and we have a fairly good idea, shall we say, where the topic is going to go in terms of, like we may not have discussed it, but we usually know each other pretty well enough to kind of know what's going to come up.
I mean, sometimes.
I think this is going to be a very different one, and I'm curious to see where this goes, and I'm really hoping that our listeners engage with this and have, they take the chance to share their opinions with us on social media, etc. So I want us to talk about what kink means to us in terms of image, particularly self-image, but also self-expression. And I think self-expression is kind of the key part of this.
Okay.
And let me be clear, when I say kink, I'm not talking the sex side of it. I'm talking more about this idea of kink as a subculture.
Yeah, yeah.
So kink as part of the sort of the culture that we live in, the subculture of the LGBTQ community. I'm not talking about sex. I'm not talking about particular fetishes. I'm not talking about sort of the way that you have sex, etc. Although some of your self-expression may be shaped by some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same way that we have the bear community subgroup, the sort of the twink subgroup, the putt players, throw a dart and hit the board sort of thing. Like, it's more that sort of thing that I'm wanting to discuss.
Yeah, a lot of people may argue a lot of the kinks that we engage in aren't inherently sexual.
Oh no, I'm not saying they are. And this is the thing. Like,
I'm agreeing with you. If someone dresses up as a pup and interacts as, like a puppy, that's not inherently sexual. And a lot of them would argue it isn't.
No, it isn't. And you're not wrong, but the reason that I'm being keen to draw this distinction is because one of the things that I want to talk about is the way that we express that on both an internal level and an external level. So I think many kinks, I don't even use the term there, excuse me, I think many kinksters would describe themselves as kinksters. Like, they identify with that as a subsection of the LGBTQ community. Well,
not necessarily, yeah.
For the purposes of our conversation.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not trying to erase,
our straight people can be kinky as well, yes.
I'm aware, I'm not trying to erase that, but, we are predominantly an LGBTQ podcast, and therefore, But, I, myself, identify as a kinkster, and I have consciously looked to build some of that into my self-expression in terms of my external self-expression of how I dress and how I present myself.
Sure.
Then there's other people like yourself where that's not really as big of a thing, right? Because your self-expression with regards to being a kinkster is generally more an internal awareness, I think it would be fair to say.
Internal in the sense that it is kind of amongst other Kingsters.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the most part, yeah.
Whereas for me, it's one of those things where if you see me on the street and you know, you know. You know what I mean? So I am very rarely these days going out in casual, let's be clear, like in casual wear without wearing at least some form of leather. Whether that be my bar jacket, whether that be a leather shirt, leather jeans, like a holster harness. Like, if you see me, you know, if you know what you're looking for. I think for yourself, there's only really your collar that you wear on a regular basis.
That's pretty much true. Although I would also argue that because my primary go-to kind of fetish gear is latex.
Okay.
And that is a slightly more unusual material than leather. I mean, there are certain bits of leather that you wear, like if you go out in leather harness, then yeah, people will have a look at you. But even if I just wear a latex shirt, I'm like, that is going to be quite unusual. And also, it's not very comfortable. Come on.
I mean, you say this, to be fair, like, I've gone out in my latex shirt and things before.
Yeah.
And I think this is the key thing for me. It's just like my self-expression is very overt. Yeah. And I actually need to kind of give a little bit of credit here to a friend of mine called Danny Nguyen, who is a remarkable writer, and I highly recommend you check out his stuff. But it was through a few conversations with him and his, like, example that he gives just by being himself, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because he will integrate their harness and their bar jacket or various, you know, various elements of their identity into their physical fashion.
Sure.
Now, it's interesting to me because for me, and I'm curious how you feel about this.
Right, okay.
Because I know you, so I identify as queer.
Yeah.
And we've discussed this very briefly before, but like we'll do a full show on it at some point. It's actually in the pipeline, but I identify as queer. To me, part of my queer identity comes through bringing some of these things into my day-to-day outfits.
Okay.
And part of my queer identity is that sort of, how do I explain it? It's not trying to be showy. It's just trying to be true to who I am. And, like, what makes a big part of what I do. In the same way that, you know, someone who is an absolute, like, metalhead, for example, might wear t-shirts and what have you with various different metal bands on in terms of artwork, etc. Okay. To me, that's my leather jacket. That's my sort of, my holster harness that I work on top of just a regular shirt, etc.
Okay.
And that to me is like a big part of me getting to kind of express myself and the way that I view myself.
Hmm.
And I'm curious to ask you, because you don't tend to do as overt a display type of thing.
No.
Where do you come down on kind of representing yourself to yourself, if that makes sense?
Now, okay, so it's difficult to say. Like, my kink are more like the stuff that I do rather than the stuff that I wear. Is where it comes down to. It's like, yeah. Okay, I like my bondage, I like my, like, impact play and stuff that I do.
Yeah.
And what I wear when I'm doing those things is not really that important to me. So, gear is not really a massive part of my kink identity. Okay. It's just something I wear when I go to clubs.
And you see, this is interesting to me because it's been said before that kind of kink gear is very much like drag. And so that's to me is kind of, there's an element of drawing on that, like as part of my identity for me, of that sort of, this is what I feel confident in. This is where I draw a lot of my, it's a lot of my strength. It's like my, so my friend who used to be a drag queen always used to refer to their drag as their armor.
Yeah.
And in some ways, there's definitely an element of that. As a queer person, sort of navigating through, frankly, a society that doesn't want you to reject the labels and doesn't want you to kind of sit outside of that and go, none of this really works for me. Like, there's power in being able to draw off that.
That may be true, but it's almost also, in my mind, a bit like, hey, if I'm going to wear my gear every day, which is fine, but it's like me wearing my wedding suit every fucking single day.
Okay, interesting. How much of that would you say comes down to, and let me preface this by saying that I really don't mean this as any sort of negative.
Yeah.
But how much of this comes down to the fact that you, for want of better wording, identify within the status quo of roles, as in being a cis gay man versus maybe having, I guess, that safety net, I guess, of like that being the way things are? Because I think sometimes for me there's a definite sense that I do feel a little bit disconnected. And so maybe that's a little bit of, I'm just doing therapy for myself at this point. It's just like, there's a little bit of like, I'm drawing power out from a little bit of my sort of, this is very much a big part of my identity sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't really feel like that. And it's also, it's a lot of effort to put on latex.
That's fair.
It's a lot of washing, shining, and the actual putting on the latex as well.
This is very true. This is very, very true. That's not to say that leather isn't without its...
No, but also, leather, latex is very, very fragile.
Yeah, I was about to say, I will say that leather's a lot more durable in that respect. treat it right and it will last you a lifetime. fair enough. So, I mean, that's more an external thing. Like, and by external, I mean like away from the LGBT.
Away from the scene. Yeah, away from the scene.
So, what about in scene? Because I know for you, I would say, for me, my expression doesn't change that much.
Mm.
Like, away from the scene, on the scene, it's more, I'll wear more elaborate outfits, I guess.
Yeah, like within the scene, you kind of forego the textiles, you know.
Yeah, basically.
You're not wearing denim. You're not wearing denim with your leather. You're only wearing full leather.
Exactly. It's like the most I'm wearing textile on scene is maybe socks and maybe underwear, and I can't stress the maybe on those enough.
Maybe socks. You sometimes don't wear socks. Really?
I know a few boys who like the smell, so...
Yeah, but you wear socks. Anyway.
Anyway. Don't judge me. Don't kink shame me. In fact, you're not even kink shaming me at that point. You're kink shaming the people I play with. Don't yuck their yum.
When you first go out, you wear the socks and then you take them off after.
So I may be wearing socks.
Or you take them off during a play.
Anyway, I was saying, for me, like, there's not that big a difference beyond like the outfit gets more elaborate. For yourself, the really is though, right?
Yeah, I would say that. Because I don't wear the stuff I wear you know, on the kink scene when I'm going to events and clubs.
But I mean, really, even your collar, because you wear your outside. Because you wear your collar on a daily basis.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
But the collar that you wear on a daily basis
is relatively simple.
Yeah, it's a day collar. It's designed to be deliberately misread as jewelry.
Yeah.
I don't think we can say that about your collar that you wear in service.
No. No,
because the collar that you wear in service is a big, hefty stainless steel chain.
Yeah, as you say, you know, kink is like drag. You show off, would you? You're just show offy.
Yeah. Does it change the way that you feel?
No, for the most part, it's this morgue who I'm with that changes how I feel rather than anything that I wear, to be fair.
Okay.
It does make a difference. Like, it does get you in the mood a little bit more. But yeah, for the most part, I would say it is the person. So it is the people.
So is it fair to say it's the people in the environment more than the gear itself?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, let's also be very clear to listeners here. It's just like, if you're listening to this having never been to an event, and you're kind of sat there listening right now going, oh, well, I've got no gear. Doesn't matter.
No.
The majority, not all, but the majority of nights do have, like, our quote-unquote dispensation for people that are coming for the first time.
Yes.
As long as it's in good faith.
Yeah.
A lot of events don't require you to have gear.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes gear is just as simple as, I don't know, a football outfit. If that's your fetish, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, let's be very clear. If you're listening to this for the first time, you're listening to us talk about how gear, expression, link up, etc. Yeah, there's big links there. It's not a requirement. Like, the way you express your fetish is valid.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, your kink and your fetish, I should say.
Also, if you're into your football outfits and you wear it on the street, no one will say anything.
Well, yeah, there is that as well.
Think twice.
Now you say that, having lived near football grounds for like several sections of my life, I'm kind of sat there now rethinking some things. I will never look at match day traffic the same way.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Say that again, sorry.
I don't think that's what it is.
But that's the point, you never know. But yeah, no, that's interesting to me, though, that you don't think that it comes down at all from the gear. Because I know for me...
No, not completely. It does make a bit of a difference. I think it does make a bit of a difference. It's a starting point for a good conversation.
Okay. See, that's interesting, because I know for me that when I came onto the scene, when I got my first piece of gear, it made a really big difference to me. Because I was on the scene and I'd gone to events and things with very little gear.
Yeah.
And in some cases, very little clothing, but let's not talk about those days. I was young and foolish. But, like, it made a big difference to how I felt confident enough to go out and get what I wanted, really.
Okay.
And it was a big part of me kind of coming into my own on being to express what I wanted.
Right. So, going back to my first kink scene experience,
mm-hmm.
also a long time ago, and I went to a bondage-specific event.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no dress code, so I just went in my civvies clothes, kind of vanilla clothes,
street wear. Your regular textile.
Yeah, and yeah, it was fine, and I had a lot of fun that night.
Okay.
So Yeah, and it was like throughout the next few months. I keep going back to that. Okay, I'm kind of wanting to wear something that is more like what other people would wear.
Yeah.
To go there, so I started acquiring my rubber stuff.
Mm. I mean, my first piece of gear was a harness.
Mm-hmm.
Red and black double strap harness. There's a proper name for it, but I don't know what it actually is. It's just my red harness. but I remember wearing it for the first time, and it made a big difference. And I remember actually the first place I wore it to was not an event. I wore it to a hookup. And it's actually notable because this was a hookup where I was being submissive.
Okay.
And it did a really weird thing of, like, I had this confidence. Because I wasn't used to doing hookups back then either.
Right.
Like, I was still quite timid back then.
Okay, yeah.
If you can ever believe me being timid and quiet, like, that's when it was. and it's... I don't know. It was a very, I don't want to say instantaneous thing, but it was a very quick thing. Because it altered, and maybe this is because it was a harness, but like it altered the way I held myself. And the way I hold myself when I'm in gear is a lot more confident.
Okay. I mean, the most confidence I get from wearing gear is when people come up to me and say, oh, you look really good in the gear.
That does help. Maybe this is a... Because I mentioned that the first time I wore my harness was when I was being submissive.
Hmm.
Is now maybe a good time to kind of transition a little bit into expression when you are on the scene?
Yeah.
And the way that some gear gets read in certain ways when it's maybe not the intention.
I mean, sometimes it is.
Oh, no, sometimes it is. And I would argue, like, there are times you can very clearly tell it, that it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that, and I know I did this, sometimes you'll go into an event and you'll look around and you will see, let's call them certain archetypes. And by that I mean, say, your pup in a hood and a wrestling singlet or latex, etc. Or the leather daddy archetype, or, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, let's face this, it's not just the gear that people wear. It's also, you know, the body type kind of thing. These kind of things, like, creeps into your mind and you kind of make a...
You make a split-second judgment.
Yeah, like a judgment, like a preconception.
Yeah.
Before actually knowing what is going on.
So, I'm curious, how much do you factor how other people are going to read that into the way that you put together your scene expression? And by expression here, I mean like the full, like, head to toe, how you're presenting yourself.
I tend to, unless I have a particular goal in mind to go when I go out in a particular night, I tend to kind of just go in the middle, and then I can, throughout the night, I could probably like add things or adjust myself in a particular way, and then to fit more into the kind of image of the role.
Interesting, because that's not really something you can do in leather. Like these days, I wear more leather on the scene than I do rubber.
Yeah,
and once you. A lot of leathermen will be sat there nodding as I say this, I'm sure, but like once you put like your full leather drag on, as it were, you're in your full drag. Like, there's not much you can do beyond that, apart from maybe take your jacket or bar vest off, you know? Yeah, and even then, it's where do you put it? Because, you know, you don't necessarily want to put this down and have it where you're not seeing it because you're sucking some guy's cock because, you know, it's a 200-pound fucking jacket, you know? These things cost a lot of fucking money.
Yeah. Cloakroom.
Assuming there is one, because not all places have one.
Yeah,
and assuming that you want to mess with that. but that's a lot. That can be a lot of messing around. You may not want to do that.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, my thing, my entire gear setup is designed to be neutral-ish.
Mm.
Like, it's very much designed that kind of it leans slightly more towards the dominant side, because that's me. I lean naturally slightly more towards the dominant side.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you would look at me and go, leather daddy. It's definitely not the whole bluff leather daddy thing that you generally associate with looking at leather as a kind of archetype.
Like, in my mind, right, the more layers you wear, the more dominance you kind of look. That is, that's a general,
an interesting one.
That's a general rule.
That's an interesting one, though. I'm not sure that holds.
Don't think so?
No, so it's like some of the guys I know on the scene that I in my mind, like, I look at them and go, like, you got, admittedly, these are people I know, so, you know. But, like, some of the guys on the scene that, like, I look at and it's just like, yeah, definitely, like, absolutely want you to dominate me tonight, are guys who are basically wearing nothing more than a jockstrap and a harness and some trainers.
Okay.
But this is why I wanted to have this conversation, because it's interesting how differently we look at this.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah. I've got to actually look at who you're talking about, but generally, I wouldn't associate that kind of outfit as a dominance look.
I don't know. Like, I just don't think that holds true. But this is kind of my point. Just because someone looks a certain way does not mean that that's what you... It doesn't mean that what you're perceiving is necessarily reality.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, that goes without saying. I hope.
But do you not find it... it's how do you get around that? And it's kind of... There's two kind of angles to this. How do you get around this as someone who's looking for a particular thing? And how do you get around this as someone who is just presenting themselves in how they feel expresses themselves,
mm-hmm.
but may not necessarily want what that's going to get misinterpreted as? I don't have an answer for this. Like, this is just like off the top of my head sort of thing. Like, how do we handle this? Well, I mean, apart from the standard thing, which is talk, goddammit.
Yeah, you just got the talk. If you're interested in someone, where they give them a dom vibe or a sub vibe or whatever, you still got to talk to them before you do anything.
Mm-hmm. It's... I think we get scared too sometimes.
Of course, yeah.
Especially if you're looking for something that's maybe not what's been perceived as being on offer, as it were.
No, oh, come on. Like, a lot of dominance come off as quite intimidating. They're getting around it. That's the whole.
Oh yeah.
The whole look.
I mean, there's the whole thing that Craig was saying on our leather episode about the practiced leather daddy stare.
Exactly.
Yeah. the practiced leather daddy scowl. I think they said. But I mean, it's happened to me. Like, I've been misread as being like, absolutely don't fuck with me, I'm always the dominant before. Like, you were there when this happened. It's just like, and I turned to the guy, I'm just like, hey, like, would you fancy a blowjob? And he just kind of looked at me completely shocked. It's just like, I thought you were only dominant. It's like, no, don't know why.
Sometimes it's just how people talk. Like, someone who played with you before just say, oh yeah, he's been my dom, and you know, people would just always assume this is your dom.
Mm.
This is a dom.
Sorry. Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, well, back a few years ago, few years ago on my local scene. Like, oh yeah, he's a sub there, and then I started dobbing more. Like, oh yeah, he's a switch. I'm pretty much known as, you know, the switch on the scene.
That's interesting. I mean, let's also, like, I'll acknowledge as well, like, it can be very, I guess, intimidating to make that approach when you aren't sure is maybe the wrong phrase. When you are asking if something's on offer that is kind of not what you're immediately seeing. There can definitely be, like, if I'm talking to a guy who's decked out in full leather and what have you, it's just like, but I like love to dominate him. Like, there's definitely going to be an element of being nervous to make that approach because I don't want to offend. Because some people, and this is something that's also worth noting, like, some people get very attached to the, I'm dressing this way because it puts across this image.
Yeah.
And I get it, because that shit takes time and work. But maybe we need to be a bit more aware of the fact that, you know, people dress the way they dress for a number of reasons. And while, yes, that's why you dress that way, it's not going to be the same for everyone. And if people don't ask, they don't find out.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not saying just walk up to a guy and, like, start being a twat with them because you want them to submit. Like, no, like, have an actual conversation with the person and go, hey, so, like, I'm usually more dumb than, I find you quite attractive. Would you be up for subbing sometime? Like, this is me talking from my perspective sort of thing. But, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how to approach that. Yeah, because recently, you know, I met someone new in my local events. And, yeah, he only got, like, my switchiness from other people. He didn't know that from me. It was only because someone told him Chris switches, and
it's almost like a reference type thing.
Do that, yeah. So for someone new, this could be difficult.
I think that's interesting, the referencing type thing. Like, I think there's definitely something to be said for that as well.
Yeah.
People who know me on the scenes that I'm involved with would definitely, or at least I think so, definitely turn around and say, it's just like, oh yeah, like, mainly dominant, but is known to switch. And I think that would maybe come across to anyone that asked about that. Because I'd be, like, anyone who knows me, I'd be perfectly fine with you telling people that, you know?
Yeah.
So let me ask you, I have my answer for this.
Okay.
Let's say you have put together your outfit so that you come across, or you're presenting more, let's say, perceptibly submissive.
Sure.
Because that's what you've decided you want to wear that night. It's not necessarily because you're out to sew, but that's what you want to wear that night.
Yeah.
Someone sees you at an event, whatever, and goes, hey, like, I'd really love to sub to that guy if he was so inclined. Uh-huh. How would you want them to talk to you about it?
Well, if they want to sub to me.
Yeah. Because, like, you switch as well. Like, you're kind of the opposite of me. You're more submissive switch. Like, I'm more dominant switch.
Yeah. First one was like, hey, do you fancy playing? I really fancy subbing to you. Like, nothing.
So you
nothing
like
more
it to be
that.
Quite direct?
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's interesting.
I don't know. What are you thinking?
So, I've said before, like, I like, when we talked about saunas, for example, I said I like how direct a sauna is.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, the scene can be that direct.
Yeah.
Because of the preconceptions that we've already discussed. But I actually really don't like it when it always is that. Like, talk to me a little bit. because
if, oh yeah, I expect there to be a bit of a conversation before that, like we're having a drink at a bar.
Yeah, like establish a little bit of rapport first, and then go, you know, hey, so like, just so you know, I'm usually like, if they're talking to me, I'm usually more dominant. I don't know if you'd be interested. And just be very kind of gentle about it, but just sort of put across where you are and that you're offering. Don't just come up to me and go, I want you to be this.
Oh, God, no.
Because I really hate it when people come up to you and it's just like, oh, I want you to do this to me. Like that, I've had that recently on Grindr, of all places, admittedly. But like, I've had that off a few people recently and it's just like, no, like... Don't no, come here with wants. Expectations that's putting yeah. pressure on me, sort of thing. Yeah, come here and talk.
What you want, that may not be what I want.
Exactly.
Stop talking to me about what you want.
Exactly. It's just like, let's have a conversation. Let's see where things go. Sometimes that's a short conversation and, you know, the next thing you're down on your knees. You know, sometimes that's a longer conversation and we're negotiating to do something another day. Because just because I'm at an event and, like, you tell me that you're into this thing, that might not be where my headspace is at this moment.
Exactly. Quite often that is the case for me.
I think one thing we can all do, though, is try and disconnect some of the stereotypes that we've got. Like, there's definite stereotypes on the scene of sort of, like you said earlier, like, the skimpier things are tends to be submissive. No. Yeah. Like I said, there's a number of guys I can think of where that's absolutely not the case.
Well, also, you know, when you first think of Leonard Daddy, who do you think of? Mr. Christopher. And, oh, God, he subs.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, Mr. Christopher is absolutely out there, and it's like he is switching all over the place. Like, the man switches more times than the average light in a house, you know? And Mr. Christopher, if you're listening to this, this is said with absolute love. But, like... Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you see what I mean? Like, we need to disconnect some of this. And I think this is kind of where I... Maybe this is a good place to kind of round out this discussion. Just, like... Expression is really great. And what the scene allows for expression on a broad scale is wonderful. If you've got the confidence or you want to, you can do like me. You can take some of that out into your more daily life.
Mm-hmm.
Caveat with that, not everyone's going to be okay with it. Definitely had loads.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely had incidents.
You definitely need to have kind of a preparation.
Yeah.
That kind of thing will happen.
But also, just because someone's dressed in a certain way doesn't mean that they're only looking for a certain thing.
No.
And
also, no. When you say, you know, go on the streets and like, okay, it depends on what your fetish, what your gear. Is you're talking
well,
about.
Well, yeah, obviously. I'm not saying, like, go out in just a, you know, a set of assless chaps and a cock ring, you know?
No, but, you know...
Let's be sensible about this.
Because recently I've seen a profile that kind of tags, like, gear stays on all the time, kind of, pretty much.
Mm.
And then I looked at what the fetish is suited to wear. Oh, they've got a tracksuit fetish. Like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can wear that all the time.
Yeah.
Fine.
And I mean, the gear stays on thing was a thing started by Recon, right? Or at least the hashtag.
No, I've seen that hashtag before that.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. The first time it came into my sphere was via Recon. But no, I mean, like, be prepared. Like, if you're wearing certain elements of your sort of gear in a way that can be passed in the daytime, people will make judgments. That's a thing that I deal with.
Yeah.
I once got told by a close friend of mine that I deserved the comments that had got made about me because I was dressed in rubber. Because I was coming back from an event and happened to catch a bit of flack from someone on the train. It's just like, no, that's not how this works.
That's not how it should be, but that is how it works, unfortunately.
No. I'm not going to allow you that. Like, that is not how it works. Just because someone dresses in a certain way, etc., doesn't mean they're asking for anything except exist.
That's not what I meant. Yeah, what actually should be and what actually is are two different things. Like, you shouldn't get any flack from wearing what you want to wear, but you will. That is a fact.
You shouldn't, but the thing I'll also say out there is if you are getting harassed for wearing something, and, you know, there's no reason that you shouldn't be wearing that out in public, like, report that shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know of people who have hesitated to report things because of the way that they were dressed at the time. Just like, no, that's not how this works.
No.
I think that bears repeating.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I was saying, I think bringing way back, because I kind of tangented off as I was originally closing out, like, maybe that's a good place to kind of bring this around. It's just like, self-expression is always good, and kink lets us have such a really wide way of doing that. But bear in mind that because kink allows us to have such a wide way of doing that, what you see is not always what you're perceiving it as. And, you know, talk.
Like, definitely talk.
People put so much time into their outfits and things. Talk. Most people will be really interested, really interested in a conversation where they get to talk about, well, themselves, but their gear that they've put together and why, like, they love certain things.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there are lots of facets to a person's kinks.
Oh, yeah.
That can't be just expressed in one outfit.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God. So, I mean, if I tried to wear an outfit that expressed all of my kinks, like, I don't think I'd be able to get through a fucking door.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, disconnect the stereotypes and the preconceptions and just talk. And also, go out there and express yourself, because I promise you, once you start doing it, one, it feels so much more natural, and two, it feels good, quite frankly, because you're getting to be yourself.
Like, your outfit, what people wear is a starting point. It's a starting point to, oh yeah, this is what they do.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
but that is not the only thing they do.
If you're doing it right, the outfit's going to be on the floor eventually. Or not. I mean, clone male, nude male is a thing, not. But like,
yeah.
In a lot of cases. The outfit is kind of the peacock feathers to get you interested.
Not necessarily the case. Like, I know a lot of rubber fetishes, rubber men like to have the rubber on for the entire thing.
Oh, we know rubber fetishists that I'm pretty sure they don't own any textile.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, they don't want to take them off even for sex.
As a general rule, but like, I would be really interested to hear from our listeners, like, how would you describe your expression of kink, or your expression of your kink, sort of thing? And is that a day to day thing, or is that very scene related? Like, basically, like, I want to hear from people, like, how do you express yourself?
Express yourself.
And now I've got that song with Express Yourself.
Exactly. Billy Elliot.
Anyway.
Leave us a voice message.
Yeah, leave us a voice message, drop us a tweet, whatever.
Yeah.
So, should we leave the bag there? Because, admittedly, we've kind of rambled around a little bit. I think this conversation was always going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully we've given our listeners something to think about. And like I say, I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on this. So with that sort of the bag having steeped, as it were, shall we take it out and head into the 5-minute Marvel?
Okay. 5-minute Marvel.
Yeah. But as we said before, let's just very quickly acknowledge Disney did fund the Don't Say Gay bill. They have apologized since. Marvel has tried to distance themselves from this, but as we do with video game companies, it's worth at least mentioning. Shall we go? Okay, so can we talk about the Ms. Marvel trailer?
Yeah, sure.
Like, this dropped in the last, 24, 48 hours? And I'm loving it. I'm really, like, the visual style on it is so good.
I didn't know a lot about Ms. Marvel before this. I feel like the powers that she's displaying looked a little bit different from the comics.
So
I'm not entirely sure.
I don't know her that well. And this is, I think this is one of the reasons why I'm kind of excited about this. Because we're starting to get into areas of the MCU that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a few changes, but I'm also seeing elements of it that aren't changed, or at least seem to be true to, just with a slightly different visual style.
Yeah.
Because my understanding of her power is it's usually more akin to kind of Mr. Fantastic, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's what I thought. The most contact I've got with Ms. Marvel, unfortunately, was 3D Marvel's Avengers game. It was terrible.
Yeah, not exactly the best launching platform for her. But the visual style of this series. And let's also note, this is a Disney Plus series that we're getting first.
Yeah.
Which, at the risk of having too high hopes, excites me even more, because I think they've been absolutely spot on so far.
The Marvel Plus series have been really good.
But you know what vibes I'm getting from that trailer?
What?
I'm getting very sort of Ferris Bueller meets Kick-Ass.
Okay.
Like, it's just got that, like, really kind of upbeat, kind of get away with it all kind of thing to it. And I'm really digging that.
Isn't it? Like, it could be just how they've cut the trailer, because, you know, a lot of the Spider-Man movies, the first trailer having very, very upbeat, and then you got to you know, the second, third trailer, like, okay,
maybe it's not quite like that. That's fair. I mean, I'm also kind of getting into the Spider-Verse of it. But I don't know if that's just an art style thing. It feels like a live-action art style version.
Yeah, I think that's just a common thing they just do with kind of young teenage characters.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we have to acknowledge, just like, I am absolutely down for more representation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they seem to be, like, very keen to be doing so.
Yeah.
Which, yes, more of that, please.
Indeed. Come on, Young Avengers.
I think it's coming.
Please.
Like, I don't want to get too, like, hyped, but I do think it's coming. We need to see what happens with Doctor Strange first.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is a big, that's a big threshold. That's going to determine what's going to happen next.
Absolutely, but we also know that Ms. Marvel's coming in the Marvels.
Yes. Or,
well, I think is that the working title for Captain America?
Yeah, that
Captain
is.
Captain Marvel 2 now.
Yeah, yeah. The Marvels is the title.
I'm really hoping they do this really well. Because every Disney Plus series they've done so far has been working with established characters. With the exception of maybe Hawkeye, but you were still had Clint Barton in there, and you were working with him as much as you were Kate Bishop.
Yeah, exactly.
This seems a lot more standalone. I'm not doubting we're going to get a cameo at some point.
Yeah.
But it very much seems standalone.
I mean, it's no more standalone than Loki, isn't it? Is it?
But you know Loki. This is my point. You know Loki. You don't know Ms. Marvel. And I'm kind of getting the feeling this is going to be kind of almost a TV series prologue to the Marvels.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I wonder if we're going to get a Brie Larson cameo.
I think that's more likely than anything else.
Mm. Yeah, I'm really hoping we get a Brie Larson cameo.
Monica Rambeau, she could turn up as well.
This is true. I hadn't thought of Monica. That's a good point, because we don't know what's happened with her since the end of, what they call it?
Yeah. WandaVision. Mm. And yeah, she's meant to be in the Marvels as well.
Excelsior! I don't know. I'm excited. It's a good time to be a Marvel fan again. After a long drought, it's a good time to be a Marvel fan again. But anyway.
And obviously, Moon Knight comes out in a couple of weeks.
And the 5-minute Marvel finished about 2 minutes ago.
No, I'm
Moon Knight, we will have to hold
just
until
leaving.
We,
Yeah, I'm just leaving that we are going to leave the 5-minute Marvel for Moon Knight until Moon Knight comes out.
Yes. Shall we head into the joysticks, Chris?
Okay, we can do.
What's on your joystick?
Nothing special.
Okay. Is that the game or is that just the nothing special?
No. Just I'm not really playing anything that special.
Okay.
World of Myth, kind of. A little bit.
Wildermyth has basically become your go-to at the moment, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's really simple to play.
Fair enough.
Now, also been playing this game called Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms.
Whoa. Say that again slowly because that's a mouthful. Idle
Champions of the Forgotten Realms.
Okay, is this one of those cookie clicker type games?
It's not quite like that. Forgotten Realms is the default setting for any Dungeons & Dragons games.
Yep.
It has usually been said by quite a few people that, you know, that is kind of the best idle game out there.
Okay.
But yeah, it is still kind of an idle game. They do the attacks and progress through just on their own without any interaction, and yeah, you sometimes got to put in some strategy of thinking. But
is it a game at that point?
Yeah, that's up to your debate. It's just a thing that I do.
So wait, is it because you said the Forgotten Realms is the D&D setting? Is it a D&D what's the word?
It's a
franchise.
It's a D&D. It's a D&D licensed game.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
There are several story characters who are established characters in the Dungeons & Dragons settings in their official campaigns.
Okay, so this is... it is based within a lore, then?
Yeah. Yeah, and they use the default like D&D Forgotten Realms map and places that you may be familiar with, like Waterdeep or the Baldur's Gates. They are in. They're in the game.
Okay. I don't think it'll be one that I personally check out because, like, I don't tend to bother with idle games.
Yeah, I didn't think you would. To be honest, it's just a thing that I do. I'm not like massively obsessed with it or anything, but I haven't been playing anything else.
That's fair.
Yeah. Apart from Solitaire, which also doesn't count. What's on your joysticks?
For me,
hopefully something more interesting.
Well, because I've been ill for like the last 2-3 weeks, basically all I've done is had time to play games. And yet somehow I still haven't. Because with me being like, it's that thing when you're sick, it's just like you want to play games when you're up to it, but you don't have the energy enough to do it as much as you want. But I've been splitting my time between Kirby and the Forgotten Land and Octopath Traveler. Kirby and the Forgotten Land came out with a demo, kind of a surprise demo last week, I think it was. And they give you a surprising amount of gameplay for a demo. You get you basically get like the first full area, which is split across 3 levels.
Okay.
Gives you a good amount of the Big Mouth mode that's been advertised in all the trailers, so I'm not giving spoilers away at that point. Gives you a couple of boss fights, like a mini one and a major one. And I very much get the impression this is the first kind of opening level, even though it's technically 3 levels in the way it's split, whether this is just because of the demo or what have you, I don't know, but like the way they split it out in there.
Yeah.
And it's shaping up to be a good game. It's
fair enough.
This is going to sound like a little bit of a diminishment, and it's not meant that way. It's exactly what you expect for a 3D Kirby game.
Okay.
Which might sound a little negative, but it's really not, because Kirby has always been 2D. And therefore, yeah, translating that into a full three-dimensional situation brings with it its own unique problems of, like, how do you manage the way that different abilities work, or the way that different, you know, you're no longer, like, sliding or anything like that, so you've got to change the way different mechanics work.
Mm-hmm.
It's done in a really nice way. Done in a really, really nice way. And the art style is just beautiful. I'm sorry, it is. There's a little bit of trimming on the edges, which I'm not thrilled with. For example, when you see an enemy moving around in the distance, the frame rate on that particular enemy is very low. But that's just because the Switch is the Switch. It's not built you know.
That's fair.
This is just one of those, like, tricks that they use in game development. And unless you're looking for it, you don't really notice it, because usually you're focused on where Kirby is. And then other than that, Octopath Traveler, I recently started it. I've not got very far. I've done two characters first, kind of story sections where you're just doing that character, and I'm kind of halfway through the third because I'm just trying to build up my party at the moment. I started out with one of the merchants. It's an interesting little game. It very much reminds me of almost like Fire Emblem, but with updated art styles. Not Fire Emblem, sorry. Golden Sun. I don't know why I got that confused with Fire Emblem there, but
I don't know.
But yeah, like, I don't want to say too much about that one yet, because it's one that I think I might revisit properly in a future joystick. Because I, you know, when you play a game and you know that even though you've done a nice amount, I think I played about 3-4 hours at this point, even though you've done a nice amount, you know you have barely scratched the surface. Very much one of those games.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one that I want to kind of have more chance to play and come back to. But it is what's been on my joystick this week, that and Kirby.
Fair enough. I think for me, it's just like the last month or so, there just hasn't been any game that really catches my eye. Like, oh, I have to play this game.
It's always, well, I mean, Elden Ring came out, and I know you're sometimes a fan of that kind of thing.
I don't play that. I don't play From Software games.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with From Software. I just don't play that style of
I thought you game. Did.
What? The Dark Souls
yeah,
type?
Yeah, I thought you enjoyed that. No! Kind of okay.
No, I don't like dying.
In this episode, they find out that Sai does not know his boy. No, fair enough. I mean, so I have never been a fan of Souls-likes. Not because of any sort of, like, difficulty or anything like that. I just don't find the gameplay particularly enjoyable. Now, if you do, bully like, to you, it yeah, doesn't work for me.
I don't like difficult games.
No, I don't know. I've enjoyed watching it. Elden Ring is one of those where it's like, the art style is really interesting.
Yeah.
And I've always thought about that, about, like, the Dark Souls games and all that kind of thing. Like, the art style is fun. The gameplay is just not my cup of tea. And so it becomes one of those games that I will happily sit and watch, but I won't play.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know. I don't have that kind of time to kind of replay the same boss over and over again.
I just don't have that kind of patience. Forget the time.
Exactly right. That's how I said. I don't like difficult games.
Fair enough. So, is there anything that you're kind of looking forward to, since you said you've not played much at the moment? And to be fair, we are in that weird period of the year.
Yeah, exactly. There's always a lull in the year.
With
not much being released. I don't know. There are a few games that I wanted to start, but never got round to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Crusader Kings 3, I really, really want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also really fucking time-consuming to get anywhere with.
See, this is one of the reasons why I've gone and done Octopath now, because it's just like, I know I've got a bit of time to pick up a game like that where I need to be more on it.
Yeah. I play maybe two campaigns in Crusader Kings 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that took me ages. And it's,
I mean, isn't that campaign something like 120 hours in that game? Or something deaf-like that?
It can be, if you want to go like all the way through history.
Yeah.
I never bothered doing that. I just kind of, you know, I got to this bit and I just stopped. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As that still took me ages. It's a difficult game to learn as well. It's fun. I mean, it's not too difficult to get started with.
Yep.
To get started. But it's a lot of reading menus.
That's fair. No, that's absolutely fair. I'm looking forward to Advance Wars is getting a remaster.
Right.
And that comes out next month, just before my birthday.
Hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be an interesting one to pick up. Just for the nostalgia, if nothing else.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah. I think that is the show for today.
Is that a show now?
I think that's okay. The show. So where can people find us if they want to let us know what they think on the whole expression of kink, etc.?
Yeah. Yeah, you can find us on social media at TBNJ Podcast. And you can also leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/TBNJ Podcast.
Which I would really like, thoroughly encourage people to do for this one, because like, I would definitely like to hear a few people's thoughts on this, how they would express it, and maybe play a few on the show.
Yes, please. Like, what do you wear on the day-to-day? What do you wear on the scene? Mm-hmm. What do you wear to go to events? How do they change to your mood of the day?
Yeah, and just like what do you think that gear brings for you, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But no, we will be back in 2 weeks' time. And apart from that, thank you very much for joining us. Indeed. I have been Cy.
I've been Chris.
This has been Teabags and Joysticks, the Kinky Video Game Podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.
This episode of the Teabags and Joysticks podcast has been edited by TBNJSI. The music is Quarter Conundrum by DOAK, and the soundboard consists of royalty-free audio. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye!